Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season.
Yeah,
go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for a Tuesday, game week 3 for the Patriots as the Pats roll over the San Diego Chargers by the same identical score that they beat up on the Jets, 38-14 in week 1. I'm John Rook and glad you're with us here once again inside the Patriots playbook. Brian Lowe from Patriots Video News will join us in a little while. We'll also hear from Coach Belichick a little bit later on, and we want to get to a lot of your emails. We do want to take your telephone calls. And we want to hear how much better or not you may be feeling about your New England Patriots after watching what they did on Sunday night. I have to admit that my initial reaction actually going in, I think recall, for those that may have listened last week, I said that I thought the Patriots would definitely win the game. What I also thought, though, was that I thought, you know, it had the potential to be close, and it wasn't that. In fact, it wasn't even anywhere near close. And I told John Zanetti, who spots for me in the booth, I told him, you know, as we were coming into the stadium on Sunday, and based, I don't know, just on, I guess, a kind of a feel that I got from the few players who actually cared to comment about it last week, about the whole video gate and the reaction that I was hearing from other pockets around the country, and there was, quite frankly, a lot of Patriot bashing going on. And, you know, you may be in one of those, you know, pockets of the country where there's another NFL team and people just love to beat up on the Patriots because they're the kingpin and everybody loves to, you know, whack the champion while they can, kick them while they're down. And I really thought, on my way into Gillette, fighting that ungodly traffic on Sunday, which was just, you know, I mean, it's back to the old days of Foxborough Stadium around here. That's how bad the traffic is. I have to leave a little extra early now that we know it's going to be bad because they're building this whole Patriot Place thing around here, and it's just, it's nuts. You know, you get people crossing over from one side of the highway to the next, and you got to back everybody up, and, you know, it's crazy. Anyway, you'd think that somebody would have figured out a way to get the people who need to now park in the lots across Route 1 that would figure out a way to get them back over to the stadium without holding up traffic. Yeah, let's go underground. Build some tunnels. Or let's put some, you know, footbridges in or something. But no, nobody's thought of that yet. And, you know, they'll probably think of it when we, you know, keep harping on it. So, you know, that's why I'm going to bring it up. Because quite frankly, it's an abomination. Traffic is as bad as it ever was. And if they really think people are going to come and shop at Patriot Place with that horrible traffic, yeah, wait until stores start closing. Then I think they'll figure things out. At any rate, I digress. On my way into the game, I'm thinking, you know what? I sense a mood. I sense a swing. I sense an emotional turn. And I really thought strongly Sunday morning that the Patriots would win and win going away. And again, it's easy for me to sit here and say that now. But just based on what I was hearing and, you know, what I really liked to hear and what I really loved was to see guys on ESPN and NFL Network and where else did I see it? I think Fox was one as well. You know, talk about things that they absolutely knew nothing about. The guys on ESPN, for the most part, you know, I think they're entertaining. I think mostly they do a good job. They knew nothing about what was going on here at Gillette. Nothing. I'd be happy to shoot, you know, all kinds of holes through their credibility. Zero. And to hear Steve Young and Emmett Smith go on and on about how, you know, the Patriots, you know, this is bad and this is cheating and, you know, how do we talk to our kids about this? I mean, you're talking about two guys who played for two of the worst defenders of the 1980s and 90s. I mean, you know, how many Dallas Cowboys, and hey, I'm a Cowboy fan. I grew up a Cowboy fan because that's where I grew up in Fort Worth, Dallas, Texas. But, I mean, Cowboys had how many guys associated with drugs and shall we say, cavalier behavior when they were going through their championships. And, oh, yeah, I guess maybe the San Francisco 49ers, Steve Young forgot that they, you know, violated the salary cap purposely to help build their dynasty. So, I, to hold the Patriots up to a different standard than they themselves should have been held to, I mean, please, cut me a little slack here. I'm not an ignorant fool. But I was offended because they're taking fans who actually follow the NFL for ignorant fools. You should not listen to a thing that Emmett Smith or Steve Young has to say and believe it. As far as I'm concerned, their credibility is shot. Did they play the game? Yes. Did they play the game at a very high level? Obviously, Hall of Fame level? Of course they did. They were great players. But that doesn't give them a right to say that they know what's going on when they don't. You think that they picked up the phone and called one of the Patriot players and saying, what's going on? No. I will tell you that they did not do that. They would never do that, and they rely simply on their quote-unquote expertise for being who they are. And ESPN puts them out there simply because they are who they are and because you'll watch. You're a sucker. You are a sucker if you listen and believe anything those guys say, because they could not have been more wrong. It's the God's honest truth. We know most of the, you know, I mean, PFW guys, you know, myself, Gary, I mean, we all know what's going on for the most part around here. That's why hopefully you come here for your information. The guys on WEEI locally and any other sports radio station, there was some truth. But most of the time they were talking about what was being regurgitated by the rest of mainstream media. Nobody knew. Nobody really knew. And so I'm listening to these opinions on ESPN, and, you know, Mark Schlereth happens to be a friend of mine, and I enjoy working with him every time I go to ESPN, but he was so far off base, it was laughable. Laughable. Chris Mortensen was the one who actually broke the story last week on ESPN.com, and he had the most accuracy of anybody. And you'll notice that later in the week, he somewhat backpedaled from it. He didn't really offer an opinion on whether or not he, you know, he didn't really opine on this. He was just reporting this story. And that was fair. He's doing his job. John Clayton, reporting, doing his job. Those guys pick up the phone and they talk to people. They have contacts in the league. They have contacts here. They have contacts with every team in the league. I believe those guys a heck of a lot more than I would believe Steve Young or Emmett Smith. My God. What a couple of buffoons. Total and complete football idiots. Oh, yeah, they played the game great when they played. Probably knew a lot of good inside stuff and dirt when they played. Didn't see them bringing it up. Well, you know, when I was with the Dallas Cowboys, I told Michael Irvin to take less Coke. I mean, come on. I told him to snort less Coke. I told him to go out with fewer hookers. Please. Steve Young. Yeah, I told Bill Walsh, and I told the DeBartolos, I said, we really need to stay under the salary cap. Please. Okay. If you care to comment, love to hear from you. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. I do want to hear your thoughts on the game. I brought up the whole, you know, two-week dynasty thing with the PFW guys because, quite frankly, that's what a lot of people are starting to talk about now. You know, the fact is the Patriots ran roughshod over one of the perceived best teams in the league. I saw a San Diego team that's still trying to find itself a bit under Norv Turner, which I find kind of curious because this really is Norv Turner's team. He was offensive coordinator here, in San Diego. And largely built this team. And then when he left to go take a head coaching job and they moved Cam Cameron in, Cam kept Norv's offense in. He was one of Norv's lieutenants. That was one of the reasons why they had some success, because they didn't really want to kind of ruffle the feathers of what they had started. You'd think it'd be a natural for him to come back in, but this team had some problems. They can't establish a running game. And they don't have receivers. In my honest opinion, they don't have a threat that you need to double. You can single coverage. single cover those wideouts for San Diego, and the Patriots did that. And the person that you should fear in Antonio Gates, well, the Patriots had somebody named Adalys Thomas who, you know, I thought did a pretty fair job, including on that 65-yard interception return for a touchdown. So you know, the Patriots matched up very well with what is still a great football team, very good football team, but they're having some problems offensively right now. Defensively, you know, I think there were a couple, I think there were only two things that you really had to argue with. One was Lawrence Maroney failing to pick up a blitz early on that got Tom sacked for the first time this year. During the first half, and I forgot who didn't pick. I forgot who failed to pick up the other one on the other Brady sack. But I think it may have been it's one of the linemen. It was either Mankins or Light. It's neither here nor there. You know, things happen. But I would tell you that I think the offensive line has done a pretty fair job. The weapons, the ability to stretch the field, it makes it scary, scary good. And this team is only going to get better defensively when Seymour and Harrison return. And so, yes, the Patriots have what? What was determined to be what? The second or third most difficult schedule in the NFL this year, I believe, based on winning percentage, total winning percentage of all opponents. Second or third, I think, is where I read. So, yeah, there are still some teams out there that are going to be fairly formidable. But you know that the Patriots managed to, quote-unquote, get up for the tougher teams. And you know that they always play well toward the end of the year, generally speaking, when you get close to the playoffs. So if they can stay relatively healthy, who's to say they can't win 13, 14, 15, 16 games? I thought 12-4 before the season started, looking at this schedule, would be a very good accomplishment, would win them the AFC East, probably not get them the number one seed. But I certainly thought they'd have a great shot at the two seed, you know, which would, of course, mean a first-round bye in the playoffs. And now I'm rethinking the 12-4. Now I'm rethinking that, you know, okay, let's you're going to stub your toe once or twice. You might lose a game because of a key injury. You might. So worst-case scenario is what, 13-3 now? I'm beginning to kind of lean toward that. Jason is in Florida. Good afternoon, Jason. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
Great game.
It kind of left me speechless, to be honest with you, Jason. I was just impressed with the ability to focus. I was impressed with the ability to put pedal to metal and just absolutely, you know, bullwhip a pretty good football team.
It was no surprise to me. I was given 21 points.
You were giving 21.
Yep. This team runs on emotion, and anytime they're given the underdog role, just steamrolls everybody. This is the most important game of the season.
And you know what clinched it for me? I was watching Hank Goldberg give his picks on the Sunday morning show on ESPN, and he took the Chargers and the 3.5 that they were getting, and he picked them to win outright. And I said, well, then it's all over. Patriots are going to slaughter them. Sure enough, there you go.
I knew they'd rally around Coach, and I'd like to officially welcome everyone back to the Bill Belichick bandwagon. after the game, if you saw all of them, he's back to a genius. He's no longer a cheat, and it's just insane. You know, what a great game. Great to see the players. Great to see everything going on. I'm glad, and I was really impressed with the fans. You know, I thought the fans were going to disappoint, but they did not disappoint.
I thought the crowd was as good a crowd as we've had in several years in terms of their intensity, their emotion, you know, throughout. I mean, there really was never a lull, you know, in the buzz in the crowd. I thought that was really, really good. I thought the fans did as good a job as they've done since Gillette Stadium was built.
Hey, on another note, when do you think we're going to see more from Dante Stallworth?
Well, you know, I figured if anybody had anything to be critical about somebody would bring up his name. I don't think it's so much that anybody's disappointed with Dante Stallworth. I think that they're just, you know, really kind of gladly, you know, surprised at the new toy they have in a guy like Randy Moss. I think, you know, more and more teams are going to realize that Randy Moss has got to be doubled somehow, some way. I mean, the Chargers were blatant in their non-doubling of Randy, and deservedly so, they got burnt by that. And so I think you're going to see teams now decide, all right, we got to take Moss out of the equation. He's a given. He hasn't lost a step. He's still got his speed. He's still got his ability, and we're not going to let him beat us. And so when teams finally step up, honestly, Jason, and decide to, you know, bring a safety over to help, that's when you're going to see Dante Stallworth, I think, probably have a little more attention thrown his way.
I think week four is about when he's going to make his big debut.
Could happen this week against the Bills. I mean, Dick Geron is no idiot, okay? I mean, I actually think Dick Geron is one of the best minds in the game. I think he's a very smart football guy. He just doesn't have a whole lot of, you know, player personnel help. I mean, J.P. Lossman, please. Please. But the fact is that you may see that happen this week. You may see them say to the Patriots, Moss isn't going to beat us. Okay, if you want to dink and dunk us to death, throw underneath the Welker, that's great. But we're going to take Moss out of there. So the whole key here may be Stallworth's ability to operate one-on-one. Could happen this week.
Yeah, I think you're right there. All right, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the time. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. That's how you get a hold of us. That's how you call in if you've got questions, comments, concerns, criticisms. They're always welcome and available here inside the playbook. You know, and I kind of thought that would be the next, obviously, evolving subject matter to get into. All right, so what about Dante Stallworth? How are we going to keep this guy happy? How are we going to throw to him enough that he's going to want to, you know, stay a Patriot? Well, let me first of all tell you that these guys are all on the same page. They want the ring this year. Now, I don't know how that's going to change things if they get it. I don't know how that's going to change things about attitudes. But, I mean, I know once guys get a taste of winning, I don't think they want to give it up very easily. Everybody likes to be the kingpin. Everybody likes to be on top, and you want to stay on top for as long as you can. So, you know, say he only gets 30 or 40 catches this year. Would that cause him to want to think about shopping his wares elsewhere if he wins a ring? Maybe. You know, and then if that's the case, well, then you kind of pat him on the back and say, thanks for your service, you know, and let him go someplace else and see if they can't make some money, if not here. You know, I don't know how it's going to break down for the Patriots salary cap-wise next year, but, I mean, these are all, you know, hypotheticals that are probably going to be worth, you know, examining throughout the course of the season. Because, you know, nobody's ever really happy with what's going on right now. We always have to look ahead. How are we going to maintain this dynasty? Well, you know, the best way you can. That's all. I mean, you know, trying to just maintain it the best way you can, with knowing that, you know, some guys are going to go and some guys are going to stay, and that's just the way it is. But, you know, Stallworth would be, certainly I think the next piece of the puzzle to include in there, certainly from an offensive perspective. I'd like to see them utilize Jabbar Gaffney's ability a little bit more. I actually, and Kelly Washington, I'd like to see what he can do. You know, and what's going to happen when Troy Brown is able to come off the PUP? What are they going to do, you know, in that regard? One of those other guys become expendable? It's possible. So I think, you know, maybe in the next couple of weeks we see, you know, maybe a little bit more of not only Stallworth, but we see a little bit more of Gaffney and a little bit more of Washington. Now, the one thing that Kelly Washington has going for him is he goes out and he plays special teams. He's even made some special teams tackles this year. That's also something that Troy Brown did. So right now, Washington, in effect, is kind of taking on that role with the exception of kick returns. We have Welker and Kevin Falk, and frankly, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch in terms of punt returns. And then you have, Ellis Hobbs, who's got to learn to hold on to the football a little bit better, but you still have him, and he's capable of, you know, obviously busting a big one, as we know. I think you're pretty good in the return department. I don't think they necessarily need Troy Brown for that job anymore, but that is something that he can, you know, come in and fulfill. So Washington kind of holds on to that role now. You know, my guess would be, you know, he would be the one that you'd have to kind of like, all right, get a good look at here and find out whether or not he's, you know, his career has legs here in New England. And if that's your worst problem on offense, and then, you know, you're going to be due for a pretty good year, I would say. Things are going pretty well. Defensively, you know, I really like the way that James Sanders has stepped into the breach. I mean, he's a tough customer. I think he's got a lot of stick-to-itiveness to the receivers. I think he's a solid player. He's not great. He's a solid player. I think Randall Gay is showing some flashes of what we saw a couple of years ago before he got through all of his injury problems during the championship season. I think Randall Gay has played pretty well back there. I'd like to see a little bit more of Brandon Merriweather, who comes in you know, some nickel and dime packages, and we see him on special teams as well, and they're kind of easing him into the rotation a bit. Man, we've even seen Chad Brown a lot already, haven't we? They're not afraid to throw bodies in there. Eric Alexander's made some very, very nice plays, especially on special teams. Some great plays, in fact. A lot of speed, a lot of quickness. You know, so I thought we would actually miss speed and versatility that a guy like Tully Bantakane had before he signed his offseason deal with San Francisco. But, you know, Eric Alexander is giving you a little something-something here. Giving you a little something. That's good to see. So we could sit here and nitpick and like over a lot of things, but I think the Patriots are in pretty good shape, which is why I brought up the question. I mean, the question I would pose to you, at least at this stage of the game right now, for our email question of the day is, number one, do you really think the Patriots can go 16-0? And number two, if not, who is the likely stumbling block? Take a look at the schedule. Tell me who you think is the likely culprit to deal the first defeat. Home? Away? Baltimore? Dallas? Indy? Who is it? Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. And again, 508-543-7482. That's the phone number. You can call us. I would tell you that I haven't really, I don't usually like to go at and look at the schedule and say, okay, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, or, you know, win, 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 loss, win, 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 loss. I don't really like to do that, but we all do it. We all kind of, you know, take a sneak peek and say, well, that should be a win, that should be a loss. You know, I don't think that loss is going to come this week. But the Patriots, you know, will take care of business. I think they're like already a 15-and-a-half-point favorite. I don't see that really sliding too much. Patriots will be as prohibitive a favorite over Buffalo this week as any team in the league will be a favorite over anybody this season. You don't see too many 15-point spreads in the NFL, and you're going to get that this week. Following week, on the 30th, of course, the Patriots are in Monday Night Football. They're playing in Cincinnati. You know, I think Cincinnati is certainly capable, and that city will be juiced for the Pats. But based on what we've seen of Cincinnati this far, I mean, do you see them slowing or stopping the Patriots' offense? Of course not. Nope, I don't. The only way the Patriots lose a game like that is if they shoot themselves in the foot with, you know, three or four turnovers, and maybe one or even two get returned for touchdowns. Then I could see the Patriots losing the game. Say they throw a pick and it's returned for a score and they give up a fumble, you know, deep in their end of the field or in the red zone. Yeah, then I could see them lose, sure. The following week, week five, Patriots are at home against Cleveland. You know, and while I'm really happy for Cleveland this last week, I can't believe they put 51 points up on the board, and certainly pleased for Romeo Crennel. It kind of keeps his head off the chopping block for at least another week or two. Do you see Cleveland coming in here and beating New England? No. Realistically, no. And then, of course, week six, I think, is the first real, you know, after this past weekend, the first real test. And it certainly be the first real road test, I think, more so than Cincinnati, when the Patriots go to play the Cowboys in Dallas. Dallas seems to have all cylinders clicking on offense right now. But, again, the Cowboys are having trouble stopping their own people as well. Really bad New York Giants team hit them up for 35 week before last. Or last week, I should say. So, I mean, yeah, week before last. That's right. Week one. So, you know, if the Patriots are playing and they're on their mark, what makes you think the Cowboys can hold them to anything less than 35? I mean, you might win a 41-35 game, but, hey, you still win it. So I actually don't think that the Cowboys, you know, will beat the Patriots in Dallas. Let's move on to week seven. Week 7, Patriots are in Miami. Enough said. Is there anybody in the division that has a shot? That may be the one game, because the Patriots are on the road in a place where they normally don't play well, in Dolphin Stadium. They've already beaten the Jets at the Jets. They will beat Buffalo at Buffalo. This would be the one divisional game you could see them possibly losing. But coming in Week 7, I don't think so. Week 8, we get to the halfway point of the season, and the Patriots are home against Washington. You know, I thought Washington actually looked pretty good last night. Jason Campbell, I was pleasantly surprised with. You know, he still kind of sputters a bit, but you can see that there's some ability there. And I think that, you know, Philadelphia has to be right now one of the disappointments, you know, certainly in the NFC, but maybe in the whole NFL, starting out 0-2. And I think Washington's overachieving just a little bit. So let's wait until we get to Week 8 before we really figure out if Washington is a legitimate contender. And you know, it's wide open in the NFC, right? Don't you think? I mean, it's wide open in the NFC. There's not a dominating team. The one team that everybody thought could be dominating is New Orleans, and they're 0-2. And Chicago still has Rex Grossman. Again, enough said. Right now, Chicago, I actually thought Carolina would be vastly improved, and I still think Carolina may end up being there. But I can't believe Carolina lost like they did to Houston at home. I guess, one, we should give Houston a little bit more credit. They're 2-0 for the first time in their franchise history. But the way that they kind of pounded on Carolina a little bit, I have to admit, I was a little surprised. You know, I think Matt Schaub has obviously proven to be a very, very good quarterback, and that Houston made the right choice. So, you know, if Chicago is it in the NFC right now, I don't think you're going to, you know, get much from Washington. Let's wait till we get to Week 8. But right now, you'd have to say, sure, at home, that would have to favor the Patriots. Right? Week 9, that probably is the one game that I'm going to wager that most people will say, okay, we got to lose one somewhere. That's it, because you play at Indianapolis. It'll be a game that the entire free world will be tuned into. Late afternoon game on CBS. Everybody will be tuned in. I mean, just, you know, how about a Donnybrook? Two best teams in the NFL, hands down. Team that's won it three times in the last 6 years against the team that's the defending champ. And again, I think the Patriots offensively, based on what we know at least through the first 2 weeks of the season, match up pretty favorably with what the Colts have on defense. Patriots will have their own set of trouble trying to slow down Indy's offense. We all know that. But by that point in time, Week 9, it theoretically would have both Seymour and Harrison back in the rotation, and having had a couple of weeks under the belt, and you'd have to think that, again, barring another injury somewhere, that the Patriots would be probably rounding into tip-top shape defensively. So you kind of reach your own conclusion there. I really believe, in my own estimation, that the Patriots won't face a potential loss until Week 9 at Indianapolis. That's my pick. What's yours? Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. All right, let's see if we can get a couple emails in here. Again, Brian Lowe from PVN, Patriots Video News. He's going to join us later in the program, and we'll also hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick today and get you caught up on stuff. James Kelly writes, just wanted to touch base after my email from last week. I think that Bill showed a very human side after the game. When the players rallied around him after the win, you could see how touched he was. I just read that as he really had taken this hard and that he was remorseful. I know I'm reading a lot into a few seconds of video, but it just seemed like he was a man who had taken a lot of blows and was grateful for the love of players, fans directed his way. Who doesn't love a story of redemption after a fall from grace? I'm hoping that nothing further comes from the rumors that are flying around about interfering with communications, wiring defensive players, and so forth. Enough on that subject, though. What a fantastic win that was. I did not expect that level of dominance. I expected the players to come out on fire after the week they had gone through, but wow. Wow is right, James. Wow is absolutely right. By the way, I know that this has been discussed, but I fully expect next year when the issue comes up, vote again, I fully expect defensive players to be able, or a defensive player to be able to have an electronic system in his helmet somewhere. I do believe that they'll end up having some kind of communication system defensively. It only missed by two votes passing this last year. The Patriots voted against it. I think we kind of all see why that probably is. But I think that that's probably going to pass this year, and that's probably partly because of what the Patriots just did. So my guess is that gets passed, and the Patriots will end up designating somebody to wear the microphone and the helmet. Patriots obviously have felt all along like that was a disadvantage to them because of their substitution pattern, and the same guy doesn't call the signals on every play. I mean, if it's Teddy Bruschi, great, but you know that Teddy Bruschi does not appear on every set of downs. Patriots are going to have to figure out a way to work that one out. And I'm sure that there'll have to be some sort of a rule written into the equation that will allow multiple players to have the communication abilities and either pass the helmet around, so to speak, or B, more than one player, two or three maybe even, have these receivers put into their helmets, but they cannot be on the field at the same time. Somehow that's got to be worked out. That's got to be worked out, but I do think that thing will pass. Ryan writes, big question I feel is that do the Patriots lose credibility? Every move they make is going to be watched like a hawk. This season is their chance to prove that they are a superb franchise and that their achievements cannot be discredited? Sure. Absolutely. Winning has a sense of dulling people's memories. I mean, and especially when you win in dominating fashion like they did this last Sunday, Ryan. My thought is that, you know, while this issue will probably never completely go away this season, you know, it's always going to be there, and there's always going to be some haters out there kind of dumping on the Pat and say, well, yeah, wink, wink, we know what they did. Are they still doing it? It's always going to be someone like that because, you know, when people are grasping at straws, they tend to go for the lowest blow they can find. They do whatever they can to tear something or somebody down when they have nothing else to go after. So in that regard, my guess is that it will never completely go away. But I think if you keep winning and you keep beating people, and let's say, you know, when you get to week 9, like I just suggested, and if you're able to go on the road and beat the defending Super Bowl champs in their house, well, I think then anybody who whines and complains about the Patriots and their credibility is will just look foolish and just look stupid and will definitely be branded a hater. Berthany from Lake Worth, Florida. I will root for any player that the Patriots acquire. I admit that. Talking from Tom Casale's conversation in the last hour. And it's always good to know. And she actually makes a point here that, quite frankly, I've long believed that we as fans root for laundry. We don't root for individuals. We don't root for players. We don't root for Tom Brady, per se. If Tom Brady were wearing a Jets uniform, you'd want him out on a stretcher. We root for Tom Brady because he wears the Patriot blue and silver. You root for Rodney Harrison because he wears the Patriot blue and silver. But before he did that, you didn't like Rodney Harrison. No way. Nobody did. You might have admired the way he played, but when he went down or when something bad happened to him or somebody burned him, you cheered. Just like everybody else outside of San Diego. You cheered. We root for laundry. We do not root for players or individuals. We root for laundry. We root for guys wearing the Patriots' colors, period. Dan writes, I would root for any player to suit up for the Pats, even a guy whose past is as shady as Pac-Man Jones or Tank Johnson. I may not like the fact that they were signed, and they may actually be complete idiots, but I'll root for them the same way I root for Brady Bruschi or any of the other guys that make the Pats look good. If they come in and work at being a professional in every way, then I have no excuse to root against them. I could not agree more, Dan. Now, I don't think the Patriots would go out and look to sign a guy like Pac-Man Jones or Tank Johnson, but then again, you know, they went and signed Randy Moss. Who knows? I think everybody, you know, deserves to have another chance, although it seems like Pac-Man's already had about 6. How long has he been in the NFL? 3 years? 2 years? John writes and sends an excerpt from Tom Curran's NBCSports.com column on the Patriots. And I'm not going to really read it through here, but I'll read a portion of it. He says, in terms of the further fallout and how the Patriots, you know, conceivably could be persecuted from here on out, you know, not letting this thing, you know, go away. He says, if the NFL is going to perform a colonoscopy on the Patriots' archives of tapes from past games thanks to Week 1's transgressions, Commissioner Roger Goodell needs to line up all 31 other teams for the same examination. There was no shortage of coaches and sources saying everybody's doing it. New England just got caught. So if that's the case, this kind of cheating is rampant. And what do you do And what you do, I should say, when cheating is rampant, is pull the rug back on the whole operation and make sure that every one of the 32 teams has been operating on the up and up. There's absolutely no doubt that something else is going to be unearthed by Goodell and his men when they launch a deeper investigation. If this is the scandal it's purported to be, then it has to be eradicated, and not by making an example of just one team. Goodell can't wave the integrity of the game banner and then turn a deaf ear to all the whispers that the Patriots weren't the only ones flaunting the rules. It's hypocritical, and to borrow a phrase from the last century, it's a high-tech lynching. And you're absolutely right. You know, Tom Curran most definitely was absolutely right on. And so if they're going to continue to scrutinize and look at all of the Patriots' video, then he needs to be, you know, listening to the other whispers and the other so-called experts and the brilliant minds that Emmett Smith and Steve Young provide, you know, to the NFL countdown or whatever the hell it is that they run now. And they need to start looking under the covers at the other 31 teams in the league. Henry in San Antonio, Texas. I was wondering your thoughts on Steven Gostkowski. Missed two field goals in the Jets and Chargers game from 40-plus, I believe. Do you think they might bring in another kicker? Or are they going to stick it out with Steven? He says, where's Troy Brown? Troy's on the PUP, physically unable to perform list. And he will be due to come back after 6 weeks. You know, I don't think because of everything else that's going on right now that, quite frankly, I don't think they're terribly concerned with Gostkowski, but I don't know. You know, if we get to a situation a week or two from now where, you know, a makeable field goal from 40 to 45 in that range or even further in, you know, gets missed again. I mean, and he just shanked that one on Sunday night to the right. Just shanked it right. That's all it was. Then you might see somebody come in to provide a little, you know, practice competition. You might. But let's be real here. Who are you going to bring in now that's actually going to do a better job than what you have? It may be a sense of just providing a little keen competition to keep him sharp, keep him on edge, keep him, quote-unquote, fighting for his position. But who's out there? I mean, the Falcons just re-signed Morton Anderson, for God's sake, and he's 85 years old. He's really 47. 47! And he's kicking in the NFL again. Wow. So, if he got snapped up, who's out there? You know what I'm saying? The answer is not much. Jim in Saddle River, New Jersey. The coverage of the whole camera controversy down in New York has been just hilarious. For the first week, just all of the piling on against the Pats. They're not that good. The offense looks easy when they know the calls and so forth. Then comes the game on Sunday night and the coverage on Monday, and you could almost hear a pause in all of the New York sports radio coverage, followed by a, well, yeah, the Patriots look pretty good. That and a few comments when discussing the 0-2 start of the Jets as to what they think will be the Pats looking to destroy the Jets when they play this season in Gillette. Do you see that game? Patriots is looking to make a statement or looking to embarrass the Jets when they match up again? No, honestly, I don't. I think by that point in time, when do they play the Jets again? When, let me take a look at my schedule again real quick. They will face the Jets again, let's see, week, where's my schedule? Late in the year, right at the end of the year. Week 15. That's December the 16th. So that's the next to last week anyway. So, no, I think by that time everything will be well in hand. And quite frankly, you know, the Patriots will probably have already clinched the AFC East by that point in time, and if so, then, you know, that could actually be a game that you could say, well, it could be a chance for the Patriots to lose. I mean, let's face it, you're not in this to go 16-0. You're not in this to surpass, you know, the Baltimore Colts record. Oh, it's not Baltimore Colts. What am I saying? Miami Dolphins record of 72. You're not into it for that. You know, even, you know that if the Patriots get to 8-0, 9-0, 10-0, that's exactly where the conversation is going to turn. I'm going to predict that now. It will turn here. We'll talk about it here. It will be the national buzz. You know, talking meatheads on ESPN will all be talking up the same thing. And you're going to jump into it hook, line, and sinker yourself. You're going to latch onto it and say, and this great, we're going to win them all. You know, well, that game week 16 or week 15 may be different because, honestly, probably already be decided. The Patriots may treat it like an exhibition game, and only play the regulars for, you know, a quarter. Unless, of course, the top seed, you know, or a first-round bye is still on the line. Then I think you can see the starters playing a half to three-quarters of the game, hopefully, you know, having a bit of a lead and then letting, you know, the others take over. I don't know that they would have any sort of special something-something waiting for the Jets, although, you know, undoubtedly we'll bring it up and it will be a topic of conversation leading into that week, but I don't know. I don't really think so. Thanks for the email, James. Let's see. Aaron writes, I live in Pittsburgh, and your shows give me a break from Steeler talk. Spell Steeler, S-T-E-A-L-E-R. Cool. First off, I'm a loyal Pats fan, and I'll be the first to admit Bill cheated. Bill got caught. They got fined. It does cast a bit of a shadow over the team's recent accomplishments. But I will still root for them and hope nothing more comes of this, but I will not be the least bit surprised if more is unearthed from this whole thing. Second, Bill Simmons on ESPN.com wrote an interesting column regarding everything that they missed or didn't about on the telecast on Sunday night. Have you guys read this column? What do you think of it? Let me say this. Let me address that one first. I actually am not a huge Bill Simmons fan, Aaron. I guess he just comes from a little different generation than I do. He's a little younger than I am, and I'm probably a little more old school than he is. But I actually thought his column, if this is the one that you're referring to, I actually thought that column was pretty well written. And I thought Bill Simmons hit a lot of the correct analysis on the head. And I think he has a pretty good, at least where the Patriots story is concerned, I think he has a pretty good feel for the pulse of Patriots fans. Obviously, you know, was originally known as the Boston sports guy, and that's how he got his job at ESPN. Now he's just the sports guy. But those who read him know that he is a Boston sports fan through and through. Red Sox, Patriots, primarily. I actually thought it was... I actually agreed with most of everything that he said. So do yourself a favor. I'm not going to go dig it up for you, but if you haven't read it, just go to ESPN.com and search for Bill Simmons. It'll come up and see if you agree. And Aaron says, third, what is the chance that Bill does everything in his power to beat the hell out of the Jets and run the score up as high as possible when the Jets come to Foxborough, then goes to midfield for a sweet embrace with the Jets head coach? I think you probably know better by now, but, you know, he's not going to run the score up on anybody. He may mumble something privately to some of his trusted assistants or to a couple of the guys or maybe even the locker room. Who knows? Well, that stuff is never going to get out where you or I would be privy to it. It's just not going to happen. And then again, I'm not even sure he really thinks like that. Not entirely. Treat it like another game. It's another game. He's going to get asked the question. Just another game. It's division rival. We need to, you know, make sure we're clicking on all cylinders for the playoffs. Yada, yada, yada. Jason Cole from Yahoo Sports reports that the NFL might investigate the manner in which the tape confiscated on September the 9th from Patriots employee Matt Estrella was released to Jay Glazer of Fox. Two unnamed sources leaked to Cole that the leak to Glazer might be explored by the league office. It should not have happened, and we are very disappointed about it. NFL spokesman Greg Aiello told Cole regarding the leak of the tape, but it does not impact what we are doing. Cole also reports that Commissioner Roger Goodell was exceptionally angry about the leak. This is the kind of thing where Robert Kraft looks at us and says, all you guys do is favor the Jets, the source told Cole. This kind of stuff puts us in a bad position. It's an interesting point. It also creates a perception problem for Goodell, given that his wife is Fox News Channel anchor Jane Skinner. I didn't know that. Did you know that? And so now Fox is getting a little bit of a scoop here. Wow. Okay. I could see where that would be a perception problem. More than a few PFT readers have speculated that the league office intentionally leaked the tape to Mrs. Goodell's employer. But as some internet hack wrote in his Week 2 10-pack for SportingNews.com, the tape didn't come from the league office. Several copies of the tape were made because several people outside of the league office, such as members of the competition committee, needed to see it. Once the thing exited the exclusive possession of the league office and got into the hands of folks at multiple teams, it became much harder to keep the tape under wraps. No, that does make more sense. So if there's an investigation, the NFL needs to look at not only folks in the league office who had access to the tape, but also at anyone with any team that got the thing, such as, for example, Bill Polian. Yeah, I would concur. I would heartily concur. Says here, we also think that the league should look upstream on this when it's presumed that the camera and tape were immediately put into a box that was hermetically sealed, thanks Tiki Barber, and sent to Park Avenue. But what if someone in the Meadowlands made a copy of the thing before it was bagged and tagged? Regardless of how it turns out, it makes for an interesting subplot to one of the most compelling NFL stories in years. Thank you to George from Goffstown, New Hampshire, for forwarding this item from Yahoo Sports. Thank you, George. That's pretty interesting. See how this story just starts to take on a life of itself and starts spawning little stories all over the place? It's multiplying, and it's dividing. So far, it hasn't conquered here in New England, right? Mark in Hebron, Connecticut says, I don't usually listen live, so I apologize if this has already been asked. He said, what the heck was up with the parking on Sunday? We got off on 495 on Route 1 North at 4 hours before kickoff. The traffic was backed up within a quarter mile of the off-ramp. We went to the first preseason game this year, and there were issues moving the traffic and getting people into parking then. Not sure whose brainchild the parking changes were, but I don't think they thought them out very well. Will the Pats be changing things around to accommodate traffic flow in the Foxborough area on game day? Well, I'm bringing it up because I'm hoping that someone in a position of power and authority will listen. That's all. Said it. We'll move on. But, you know, the reason that things are changed around is because they've eliminated so much of the parking on the stadium side of Route 1 for the construction of Patriot Place that they've had to move a lot of the parking over to the other side of Route 1. So how do you get the fans from there to the stadium? They got to cross the street, and to cross the street, they stop the traffic. Where the hell are the footbridges, or where are the tunnels? Go underground if you have to. There's got to be something to make an even flow of fans effective so you don't stop the traffic. They had just figured out the traffic. I mean, let's face it, with all the ramp work and all the, you know, stuff they put in over the years since Gillette Stadium had been built, you got it to the point where it was actually tolerable to get into and certainly out of a game on Route 1. You know, certainly a heck of a lot easier than it was in the heyday of Foxborough Stadium when it was a nightmare and you were in the parking lot for an hour after a game. Well, now we're going back to an hour after a game because the Massachusetts State Police have to stop the traffic to get people to cross the street. You know, I cannot believe that somebody didn't think of this. It boggles the mind. Sometimes the most simplest things just go whoosh, right over their heads. So whoever's in charge of planning here, listen up, bucko. Let's go. Tunnels or bridges? And maybe both. That'll solve your problem. Get it into the infrastructure. And do it before you open up Patriot Place. The guess is that it will happen before they, you know, I mean, that's going to open up, you know, a soft opening with a couple of the stores like, you know, the Bass Pro and the Circuit City and the Christmas tree shops and some of the big, you know, anchor chain stores that are going to be a part of this thing. But believe you me, people will not come out and shop if they know that they're in a cluster bleep for 4 hours. Won't happen. And if they're not going to come out and shop, the stores go belly up. And Patriots aren't investing all this time and money for any of these stores to go belly up. It'll happen. But for you or I or anybody else that gets stuck in the traffic, it's not going to happen soon enough. So, anyway, Mark, thank you for bringing it up. And we will continue to, you know, pound the drum on that particular issue here on Patriots Playbook. This one comes from Domingos in Alexandria, Virginia. Did you read the latest story on ESPN.com, front and center, by Greg? Who the hell is this guy, Easterbrook? He does the Tuesday morning quarterback column. Used to do it for NFL.com. He said, this Woodward and Bernstein treatment is getting way out of control. Here's an excerpt. He says, New England had played San Diego just four games back in the January 2007 postseason. Perhaps Belichick's cameraman was illegally taping the Chargers that day. Perhaps Belichick illegally used the information against the Chargers on Sunday night. The San Diego coaching staff has changed since the playoff game, so presumably its defensive calls are different. But San Diego's new defensive coordinator, Ted Cottrell, was defensive coordinator for the Bills and the Jets, both AFC East teams, in the Belichick period. Perhaps Belichick has spied on Cottrell's calls before and took out the tapes of the spying rather than handing them over to Goodell as Goodell demanded. Was New England cheating again Sunday night when the Patriots advanced the ball with such ease it seemed that they knew what defense San Diego would be in? No, he's just stirring dirt. He's just stirring dirt. I don't really think I put a whole lot of credit in a guy like Greg Easterbrook anyway. He's one of those bloggers in the blogosphere that somehow has gotten himself a legitimate job. Oh, and Gary just hands me another thing from that article by Easterbrook. It says, will Belichick even be in coaching by season's end? When the Vic dogfighting scandal first broke, most football pundits and most in the Atlanta and league offices thought there would be few repercussions. Then they thought Vic would have to make some kind of apology. Then they thought he'd need some leave of absence. Then they thought he'd be suspended for a year. Now they wonder whether he'll ever be allowed to play again. By acting Nixonian, Belichick is accelerating his fall from grace. Today, Belichick and New England are trying to pretend the scandal is over. It would not surprise me in the slightest if, before the season ends, Belichick resigns or is suspended or is fired by Kraft or even is permanently barred from the league. Belichick's head might be necessary to preserve the integrity of the game. Surprisingly soon, sacrificing Belichick to save professional football might seem an attractive option even to Kraft. Remember,
such
there is
an idiot.
There is no law of nature that says the NFL must remain popular. I think Mr. Easterbrook failed to get the note on, you know, from the Boston Globe that says that there has been an alleged, you know, contract extension through 2013. I think that deserves to go. I think that deserves to go over there in your spare pile of toilet paper over there, Gare. Brian Lowe from Patriots Video News is going to join us momentarily. Let's sneak in a quick timeout. We'll come back with B-Lowe. Yes. And more of your emails and phone calls right here in the playbook.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats! Woo! Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats! Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
The New England Patriots set a franchise record for fewest points allowed during the 2007 season.
Here's a rush, got to be sacked. Another big play.
Celebrate this historic milestone with a limited edition Goal Line Guardian poster exclusively from the New England Patriots, free. And if you think that's good, how about having it signed by two members of that record-setting defense, Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren.
He's going to be sacked for a safety.
Take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer by making qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points card and free Goal Line Guardian poster autographed by Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren.
Roosevelt Colvin, wow!
Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph poster limited to the first 200 with qualifying purchases. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com. When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna. Let me tell you about the first ever Game with the Greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching the game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the first ever Game with the Greats. On October 14th at Gillette Stadium, watch the Patriots take on the Cowboys in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me, a bunch of my teammates, and other Patriot alumni. Guys like Andre Tippett, Steve Nelson, Steve Grogan, and Pete Brock will be there with you to enjoy the game and just hang out. Tickets are limited because they're only $25. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on Alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
yeah,
season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
You're such a fast guy at editing. That's amazing. That's very impressive. Very impressive. Gary Grodecki with a new open. Hour number two of Patriots Playbook for Tuesday.
Thank you very much.
And we now have Patriots Today's Brian Lowe.
What year is it?
2007!
Ah, right, that's right.
That's right, baby.
Good work.
What's happening?
Good work. Not much.
Where's
not
Christina?
Much. Christina, you know, we're going to get Christina in. And, you know, Christina's...
It's not that I don't like seeing you, but let's face it.
But let's face it.
I think she brings
me.
A little more to the table.
I don't want
to
see.
Yeah, well,
I don't want to see me either. And fortunately, we're on the radio, John. Right, and I think the cameras in the studio are off.
Yeah, can we? By the way, can we video stream Christina's appearance in here in the playbook, Gary? Is that possible? Because I think
well,
that would. I think
no.
I think our viewers, our listeners, would really appreciate that.
Well,
for the most
fortunately,
part.
They can see her. And unfortunately, me, but they can see her every day on Patriots Today. So,
how you doing?
There you go. So we'll get her in here.
The former Patriots soon. Video News.
Exactly.
Now Patriots Today.
Now
right?
Patriots Today.
Right.
Patriots. See, Patriots Video News worked when back in like the mid-late 90s when video on the internet, when the internet itself wasn't as mainstream. So you kind of, if it was video on the web, you kind of had to make sure you had the word video in there.
Right.
Now I think it's almost mainstream enough that we figure we can get away without using the, having to have the word video in there. You know what I mean? So sounds a little better, Patriots Today.
All a part of the Patriots Football Network.
You're right, right about that. You're right about that.
So if you've done any kind of perusing, patriots.com, and you wondered what Patriots Today is, check it out. Obviously,
that's right. That's
Brian,
right. On the
Christina.
New look, patriots.com. Patriots.com, by the way. I mean, not just a new
By the way, I like
show,
it, too. I actually like the way that things are kind of redesigned.
Well, I like it because our video stuff is... Boom! Right there, front and center. You go on there, and there you can't avoid it.
Good stuff.
So,
what are your initial thoughts on Sunday's win?
Boy, I mean, if you put just put everything aside, all the stuff from last week aside, and I'm sure I know you've already been talking about. I'm sure it's not like that's over. I mean, we'll still be talking about that. But from a pure in you know between the lines 60-minute standpoint, you know, you can't imagine a team starting out this strong from. You know, each phase of the game, they're playing two teams that were playoff teams last year. All of their offseason acquisitions, and I mean all, and I know you mentioned Dante Staal, you know, there's some guys we'll talk about. Their offseason acquisitions have been not just good, they've been outstanding through two games, and there isn't really a hole on this team. Now, they were 2-0 back in 2002 and riding high, and they've been 2-0 before. And you know it doesn't always work out that way. And you just want to hesitate before you you know start saying you know throwing out the 16-0s here. But they're 2-0, and I don't know, John, if you happened to see Cincinnati Cleveland the other day, but this Patriots offense plays those two defenses, each of those two defenses in the next couple weeks.
They could score 60.
Oh man, I mean they're rolling right now, and there's no reason to think that they're going to hold up because now they have the chip on their shoulder. There was no reason to have the chip on their shoulder until this week. So, you know, it's looking pretty good for them from a football standpoint.
You'd have to agree with that.
You got to figure.
You'd have to agree with
that. And I mean, my thoughts on that game, I mean, I was stunned that they were ahead 24-0 in this game. I mean, I figured that San Diego, I figured the Patriots are a better team than San Diego, I think, overall. I thought that San Diego, I mentioned chip on their shoulder, I thought San Diego would have had enough of a chip on their shoulder from what happened last year in the playoffs that they would be competitive in this game. I mean, they were not. It was a non-competitive game. 3 minutes into the game, the Patriots had scored a touchdown on a virtually flawless drive and had the ball back after an interception on San Diego's first play. And you knew, I mean, the game was over for all intents and purposes. I thought it would be competitive. I thought that San Diego has enough talent alone to be competitive in a game like this, and they really proved otherwise. I mean, can you imagine that flight home?
Oof. I can't imagine. Ooh. It was a whole
overnight cross country.
Yeah, really think to be part of it. But hey, sucks to be them. So
and this week, and this week, it sure does. I do think that San Diego is going to be there in the end. By the end, I don't mean the Super Bowl. I mean I think San Diego's going to be there. Talent alone.
Well, this is
they
what,
should be there.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah. I think that eventually they should get it together. I don't know if it'll respond like, you know, 14-2 like a year ago.
No,
but
no.
Let's face it, they probably are still, you know, the class of that division with all due respect to Denver.
Right.
That being said, I think that that's where Sunday's win will end up paying huge dividends because now you have home field advantage.
You do. And, you know, if it does come down to what everybody thinks it was going to come down to, Patriots, Colts, Chargers at the end of the year, you know, obviously there's still the Patriots, you know, Colts game. And
well, if you're the one seed, if you somehow beat Indianapolis in Indianapolis and you're the one, then the Colts and Chargers, you know, best case scenario, would they'd face each other off in the other semifinal.
They may have,
and you'd get the winner of that match up at home.
Right, at home. Well, that's what it comes down to. And let's face it, the Patriots last year against the Colts, obviously we know what happened in that game. Patriots had a huge lead. Bottom line is the Patriots only lost by 4 and had the ball at the end. If that game is in New England and the talent levels are the same and injuries and all that, is that enough of a difference that if the Patriots were home, they would have won the game? You got to think it probably is. I mean, home field advantage can be huge, and it's not, you know, you don't have to have it, as Pittsburgh proved a couple years ago, but it definitely helps, and the only way you get that is, you know, by beating these teams when you face them in the regular season. That's huge. So that November 4th game obviously is the big one, and you know, I'm sure the Colts and Chargers, whenever they play it, I'm sure I know they do because they were both division winners. You know, that'll go a long way towards playoff seeding as well. But you know, getting that leg up in this early, you know, being 1-0 in the division and then having a win over a team that is likely to be a division winner, those are huge early on.
The question of the day that we mentioned in the last hour, and I'll mention it to you right here, and for those that may be just logging in, we'll give it to you now, and you can respond, webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address, webradio@patriots.com. But the question of the day was, take a look at the schedule and tell me where you think potentially the first loss is going to come, if at all. And I obviously selected November the 4th at the Colts as being the most likely. Until that point in time, it just didn't stand to reason, even though you have to go to Cincinnati and you have to go to Dallas between now and then. I didn't think either defensively either one of those teams is going to be able to slow down the Patriots offense if it stays healthy like it is now.
At Cincinnati doesn't scare me much, especially what I saw the other day. I think Cincinnati's offense is one of the best in the league, but I also thought San Diego's was pretty good, and I think the Patriots will be able to – they might do to Cincinnati what they do with a lot of other teams. They'll pick and choose. Either they'll shut down the running game and kind of let Chad Johnson, T.J. Uzmanzadeh do a little bit of damage but not enough, or they'll shut down the passing game and let Rudy Johnson run. You know, that's an offense that you can't probably fully stop, but they might be able to stop an element of it and not let the other element kill you. Mm-hmm. I think at Dallas is a tough game. Absolutely winnable, but I think a tough game. And, you know, at Miami – let's face it, Miami has had some putrid years recently and still beaten the Patriots at home. We can't overlook that game because I think that's just a defense that still has some defensive players who have terrorized Tom Brady in the past that you have to give them a semblance of respect in that they know what to do against the Patriots offense. But certainly the Colts game is the first real big-time game where you've got to say, the Patriots won't be favored. I mean, the Patriots would be favored if we're looking at that, and we're not. But if we were, they'd be favored in every game until the Colts.
Yeah.
I think that's
reasonable to assume. I also think that after the Colts game, if by some chance they get through that, then I think that's when you'll hear a lot of the conversation talk about 16-0 again. But
I think there's already some conversation about that if you read some of the...
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. I think it's a little, you know, silly, you know, 2-0. But you know, here's the thing. You still have a game that you have to play against Baltimore later in the year as well that I think could also be another stumbling block.
And, you know, once we start, you know, we start getting into games like that in December that are tough games, and, you know, but so many things. Hey, things can change by the time they play Cincinnati, so it's hard to talk about that. But you know, let's say by December, Baltimore is out of it, or let's say you know Philadelphia. You know, you just never know, and those games could have some different twists than they do right now. But yeah, I mean, the Colts game is really the one key.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Craig is in South Carolina. Hey, Craig, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, John?
Great. What's happening today?
Well, actually, I hadn't planned on calling in because I
until he heard my voice.
I sent you an email a few minutes ago, but I couldn't help it. I mean, I'm like most very loyal Pats fans. You know, 30 some odd years I've been a fan, and it's just killed me, you know, to listen to everybody out there, all the haters, you know, just slam Belichick. And I was sitting here watching TV a minute ago, and on ESPN they've got Outside the Lines, mm-hmm. and Goodell and Upshaw have been absolutely slammed in the Senate today for, you know, the rehabilitation and the pension fund and, you know, NFL's former and retired players basically just being denied claims like crazy.
Yeah, you know what? I saw, Craig, I saw the special on Costas Now on HBO that ran the last couple of weeks about how Gene Upshaw continues to get hammered by former players, older players in the, that were in the league because of the pension plan. Is not so much the pension plan, because I think the players realize that, you know, hey, we may have been there in the past, and it's not really you know, the current player's fault that the money is what it is now as opposed to when they were playing. What the former players are after is health benefits.
Right.
And, you know, disability benefits because of guys like Earl Campbell, who was really one of my heroes and one of my favorite players of all time. And I think a lot of the veteran leadership, guys that Gene Upshaw played with, feel like he has turned their back on them and he is, you know, garbage to them right now. And so they're coming in hot and heavy after him and after Roger Goodell, you know, for a league that makes a gazillion dollars and not, you know, turning anything back to the people who laid the foundation, literally with their bones and their muscle and their sweat and their blood.
Exactly. Well, based on what I just have seen the last 10 or 15 minutes, the Senate has absolutely slammed Goodell and Upshaw. It'll be on CNN and everywhere else tonight. But they had, you know, NFL players' family members testify. Several hundred people testified today. And one of the senators sat there, and he said, you two sitting in those chairs right there, he said, how can you get word from two doctors that this man has a very serious problem, and then your group sends them to a doctor and they don't even look at the brain scan and you deny their claim? He said, how can you two sit there and call yourself officials? I mean, they were all over them.
Well,
and
good.
Were there any responses?
What did they say?
Yeah, what were the responses?
Well,
I look forward to seeing this.
Yeah, they were like, well, we realize we have some problems and we're, you know, attempting to make improvements. And I mean, Ditka, Gale Sayers, I mean, every big star you can think of from back in the day was up there just calling them dogs.
Well, good. I think that this is long since overdue. I think there are many, many players that certainly deserve to have some kind of a benefit like that, you know, a pension, you know, it's a little hard for me to argue that one, but I certainly think the wellness benefit, you know, and the disability pay is something that you got to do for these guys.
Yeah,
that's the biggest aspect of it. And D-Lo, good talking
hey,
to you finally.
Craig, hey, hopefully you'll hear more from me. I'm back on board here with John, you know, giving some.
Yeah, baby.
You know, not that John needs my help, certainly not. But good to be on. Good to hear from you.
Okay, go Pats.
Thanks.
Got it.
Thanks, Craig. Appreciate that. 508-543.
Very nice.
7482. 508-543-7482. Note, Craig, though, that you didn't get blown up by Gary until after you were already done with
right,
the call.
Right, you took the initiative and hung
that's
up
right.
yourself,
yeah,
and then Gary. Yeah.
Very smart. Okay.
I blew him up last week.
Okay. David Andover writes, what's the deal with Dante? We had this in the first hour
yep.
of the program
yep.
as well, and
yep.
I gave my thoughts on when I thought Dante would actually, you know, work his way into the lineup a little bit more prevalently.
Yep.
He
yep.
says he's been super quick
And it seems like Moss and Welker are taking all the thunder. Is Dante going to be the J.D. Drew of the Patriots?
Well,
first of all, he has to play a little bit more than J.D. Drew has with the Red Sox.
He also definitely will not be the J.D. Drew, because if Dante Stallworth has a disastrous year, he's gone, and there's no 5-year guaranteed contract here, so yeah. We don't have to worry about that. Now, I'm not sure. Are you still going on the email there? All right. Well, I'm not sure what your perspective was. I think Dante Stallworth is going to have an unbelievable breakout game. Maybe it's this week against Buffalo.
I said that too, and the reason is because teams now, Brian, what are they going to do when they see that, you know what, I guess Randy Moss still has a little bit. We got to bring somebody up and double cover him.
Here's what I said after the Jets, after the game against the Jets last week when Randy Moss just dismissed members of the secondary as if it was, you know, any of us out there. I said, the Jets were certainly at a disadvantage because Randy Moss was a complete unknown as far as what he can do in a Patriots uniform. He didn't play in a preseason game. He had missed a month of practices. No one knew how quickly he could click with Tom Brady, and we've certainly had plenty of wide receivers over the years who have acknowledged that there's a transition. You can't just jump into the system and be on the same page with Brady. And, you know, Rishay Caldwell did a pretty good job last year, but it was still took a little while. I said after that Jets game that one of these upcoming weeks – teams will realize, okay, Randy Moss in a Patriots uniform is for real, and we're going to have to make sure we double-team him. In the Jets game, Stallworth and Moss were on the field only a handful of times together. Mm-hmm. One of these weeks, they're going to be on the field together a lot, and one of these defenses is going to take extra precautions on Randy Moss, and Stallworth is going to be open and is going to have a Randy Moss-like game. I really believe that. Now, will his stats at the end of the year be the same as Moss? Will he have as big a year as Moss? Probably not. I don't know if he's as good a player as Moss. He probably isn't. But I think one of these upcoming games, he's going to have the big game, and Moss is going to have the two catches for 26 yards.
You know, the obvious thing to point out is the fact that the Patriots have been in a lot of traditional two tight end, two running back sets. And so when you have two tight ends blocking and you have a fullback in the backfield, you only got room for two wideouts.
Right.
So when they go to, you know, empty backfield, or they go to a one-back set, you're going to see three wideouts in the game, and it stands to reason he's obviously going to draw his share of attention.
Yes. Some of their it's been fascinating to see some of the things they've done. That first drive of the game the other day, no huddle, same personnel the entire time, 6-for-7 Brady was, and the one incompletion was just that weird, slipped it out of his hands and he recovered and all that. But even more fascinating is what they're doing with Kyle Brady and Ryan O'Callaghan. And they're lining those two guys up generally on the right side, and you got essentially three tackles lined up together: Kazier, O'Callaghan, and Kyle Brady. And Kyle Brady is a tight end, but he's virtually the size of a tackle. I mean, for all intents and purposes.
Big boy.
You get those three guys out there, and boy, does that cause some problems for a defensive front seven that might not know what's coming. They're doing a great job blocking, and then they're doing some, you know, Brady and O'Callaghan both lined up on the right, then Brady going in motion, and everybody thinks, well, they were going to run to the right, but now what are they going to do? You got two tackles on one side. You got a massive tight end and a left tackle on the other side. Where are you going? There's been some fascinating stuff, and we may have only seen, you know, a tip of the iceberg at this point.
Very true.
I do think Stallworth is going to have a breakout game very soon.
Mark with a C from New Hampshire says, guys, wondering if you think we're on a crash course for the Indianapolis Colts game in November? Duh.
Well, it's like, here's the thing. Regardless of whether the Patriots are undefeated that week, or the Colts are undefeated, or they have one loss or two loss, short of one of the two teams going in a free-for-all and being 2-7 on that week, which I don't envision, it doesn't matter if they're both undefeated or whatever. That's going to be the NFL game of the year, because everyone dismisses the NFC as not really a contender for the Super Bowl. And, you know, based on the results, it's kind of true.
Seen so far this year.
So that's going to be the biggest game. And absolutely, they're on a crash course. Definitely some big games before that, and there'll be some big games after it. But, hey, it's the AFC Championship game rematch. We know the history between the two teams, and they'll probably be the two best teams when all is said and done. So, sure, it's a crash course for that day.
Catherine sent us.
You might want to tune in that day.
I would think that you probably want to be, you know, around that day to watch. Yeah. Catherine in Wisconsin says, you just read an email mentioning the Bill Simmons article. I thought it was excellent, so she sent it to us, the whole thing. Did you see what Bill Simmons wrote on ESPN.com?
I haven't, and I know you were, before I came on, you were talking about Greg Easterbrook. I'm still trying to catch up on my Monday morning quarterback stuff. I haven't quite gotten to the Tuesday morning quarterback yet, but Easterbrook and Simmons are two columnists on my weekly must-reads anyways. So I will get to them.
It was basically he spent some time kind of lambasting NBC for trying to blow out, you know, the whole camera gate, as he calls it, and we call it video gate, spy gate, whatever you want to call it here, hammering Chris Collinsworth. Mm. And fact is that he brought up some real good common sense points later in the article. And if you haven't had a chance to see it, you can go to his column stuff on ESPN.com. Let's see here. He says a couple of things. Let's see. Couple of things he brought up. Well, now let me see if I can find him here. Oh, he talks about Easterbrook. One of the items he brings up is there a chance, just a chance, Belichick has gotten a little paranoid in his old age since an undermanned Jets team played them closely in all three Pats-Jets games last season. He spent this spring and summer wondering if Mangini had figured out a way to steal their signal, so he decided to tape their coaches in week one to see if that was true. And then he got caught doing it. Think about that for a second. Okay? I wouldn't put that past us. And I say the collective us. I wouldn't put that past anybody here because, you know, it's almost like the sneaks outthinking the sneaks. And so it's kind of like he wanted to tape the coaches to see if they knew what our signals were.
Oh, a little refer, a little
that's exactly,
taking the next.
And he got caught doing it.
Well, whatever the motivation was to do what he was doing, they got caught. I mean,
yeah,
I, you know,
right.
Whatever the motivation was, whether it was they know we do this and we know they do that, and so let's do that. I don't know. But, you know, it's an interesting conspiracy. I mean, let the conspiracy theories play out. I mean, they were found guilty of what they were accused of doing, as we know.
So. Here's the other one. He says, "Is there a chance Roger Goodell is doing the 'I'm leaving no stone unturned' routine because he's so determined to show everyone there's a new sheriff in town, and because it's becoming more and more obvious the previous administration was asleep at the wheel on anything and everything except the next TV deal."
Well, he's definitely proving that he's the new sheriff in town. I don't think this follow-up investigation, if it does happen, has anything to do with that. I think he has proven up to and including last Thursday's announcement of what the discipline would be for the Patriots that he's a new sheriff in town. I mean, the $500,000 fine is the maximum. You can't get higher than a first-round pick. And short of the suspension, which we've heard, you know, debate on, he's proven he's the new sheriff in town regardless. So this follow-up investigation, I don't think that is him trying to, you know, really put his fist down. I think he already has. So
the other paragraph that I actually happen to agree with, and this is where, you know, I think that Bill Simmons actually pretty much hits the nail on the head. He says, since they've already paid a steep penalty for a one-time indiscretion, can we move on with the 2007 NFL season, please? Is everyone done piling on and competing in the race to see who can seem the most disgusted and outraged contest? As a Massachusetts reader named Sidewinder emailed me on Friday, his quote is, "I can't believe how hysterical Peter King sounded on WEEI when talking about Belichick's indiscretion. Talk about getting his skirt up in a bunch."
How dumb is Peter King?
Does this guy realize sports is the toy department of life? Save the righteous indignation for the 9/11 anniversary or the waste of a generation in Iraq. See, that's the thing. It's sports. People cheat. People do bad things. People make mistakes. It's just like real life, only it doesn't matter nearly as much.
Well, I think it's fair game.
Bingo.
I think it's fair game to take this seriously, though. I don't think anyone is starting to say that this is more important than how is Kevin Everett doing. I mean, there's definitely things within football and outside of football that are more important than this. But within the scope of the NFL, I don't think it's unfair for people to take it seriously, members of the media, other league personnel. You know, so having an opinion on this is fine. Taking it seriously is fine because a lot of people have their lives depending on, I mean, a lot of people who work in the NFL, I mean, this is their life. And, you know, I don't think they're going to say that nothing else in the world is more important than this.
Mm-hmm.
But within the scope of the NFL, it's important and it's fair to have strong opinions on it. Now, as to the question of will this ever die down, will we keep on hearing people spout off about this? It will die down. It'll start to die down tomorrow because I think it's run its weekly NFL cycle. Now, by die down, I don't think it's going to stop because we're still going to, as long as the Patriots are doing well, or actually, even if they start to do poorly, we're going to hear about it all through this year, and we're really going to hear about it next April when the draft comes around and there's only 31 picks. So through then, it's never going to really die down. And it may still be lingering, but we're not going to.
Although
We still have one of those 31, FYI.
Yeah.
But I think that We won't be hearing from all the national columnists beyond today or tomorrow. Guys like Peter King and Tuesday Morning Quarterback and all that. Last Monday and Tuesday, this really hadn't hit big yet. Let them get their weekly columns out of their way. Let them give their opinion on it, and then we'll move on to football. I think that's gonna be how it'll play out.
Pratt in Germantown, Maryland says, as someone had brought up Stallworth, I really can't wait to see both him and Moss being utilized as a Harrison-Wayne combo. Mm-hmm. That would be explosive, but so far Randy Moss has more than impressed me as a guy who really wants to play hard to win. I haven't seen him playing this well since his Viking days. He certainly has a lot left in the tank. My question is, after this year, do you think it is reasonable to think that either Randy Moss or Stallworth will remain with this team next year? I know Randy Moss is a clear-cut one-year deal. However, this tandem of Moss and Stallworth helps majorly in winning a Super Bowl this year. I think Belichick and Pioli should consider bringing them both back next season. This way we can match up with the Colts and give them a real fight each time we play them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously too early to say. You know, a lot can happen between now and next February and March.
Right.
But I think that, you know, let's take each one individually. As we said, I mean, Stallworth has a long-term contract here. It's like 5 or 6 years. However, there's a trigger next March where the Patriots basically have to pay an option, I think is how it works, to trigger the rest of the deal. Most likely, that doesn't happen. What could happen is a restructured contract with him. Now, Moss, on the other hand, his deal will be up. Is that right? No, his deal won't be up. It is the same. I'll have to check on that. But either way,
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's unlikely that they'd both be back under what their current deals are.
Right. There would have to be a restructuring.
There would have to be a restructuring. And, you know, I think if they both are fitting in and they both realize that being here is the best for their careers, then they could stay. If they both have very good years and one or both of them decide, if they get to the point where they're able to make the decision, meaning the Patriots don't trigger the rest of their deals, that they want to test the market, if they both have huge years, they'll probably get blown away by other offers. So it's hard to say it right now. I mean, if everything goes well this year and they're both fitting in and Brady loves them and Belichick loves them and everyone's happy, there's certainly a way that one or both could come back. I'd be surprised if both come back on big deals, but, you know, who knows? Let's see how it plays out this year.
Can we enjoy this year just a little bit?
Let's
just wait and see.
Because
if they both go nuts this year, then you're going to probably want to do something somewhere else to restructure where you can bring both guys back.
Exactly. If all is working perfectly and there is a way you can keep it going for another year, then you're going to do that. But, yeah, way too early to start talking about that.
Ken in Huntington Beach, California says, first off, the greatest danger the Patriots face right now is getting lazy or complacent. I know they're good at staying focused and dedicated, but with as dominant as they are, even the Patriots may have a hard time getting psychologically ready for every game. Other teams are going to be targeting the Pats after these first 2 weeks, and all it takes is one game in which the Patriots let it get into their heads, will beat this team easily.
That may be.
Yeah.
What's wrong with 15-1? I mean, let's say they do.
Look, as far as I'm concerned, what's wrong with 14-2 or 13-3? Right. As long as it gets you one of the top two seeds,
right?
Preferably the top one.
The top two seeds are obviously the goal, and you know you don't want to be. I mean, being a division winner but being the third or fourth seed is not going to be satisfactory to this
no.
team. But let's face it. If they slip up once and they don't concentrate, or let's say they have, like, you know, a Monday night football game on the road, which they have twice, and then have to come back on a short week to play, you know, the upcoming team, and maybe the upcoming team has a bye the previous week. There are certain factors where they might, you know, might not be there and might not win every single week, but we don't have to, you know, beat down on them because of that. I don't think the complacency is going to be a problem. I think there's other I mean, they are playing another team every week who will be pumped and jacked to play them. If they lose or slip up, it might not be because they're complacent. It could be because the other team was ready to go. I honestly think that the developments of the last week will provide that extra chip on the shoulder. And every time a guy like Teddy Bruschi hears Hines Ward or Donovan McNabb say something, even if it's in jest about where's my ring from 2005 Super Bowl or they cheated when we play, every time some of these veterans hear things like that, that's the motivation they need to not be complacent and win it all this year. I think that's where they're going to get their motivation, if needed.
Ken continues by saying, the toughest game this season? He says, December 9th against the Steelers. Pittsburgh looks amazing and has always been a quality club. Everyone says Indy is a big game, but I truly believe that the Patriots will revert to their previous ownership of Peyton Manning.
Oh, yeah, that
Steelers, would that would obviously be one. Yeah, that'd be one you'd have to look at.
Well, that would be about the Steelers.
I also said the Ravens, too. I think Pittsburgh looks pretty good.
They look pretty good. You know,
for 2 weeks, they look pretty good.
So does Detroit, and who'd they play? Oakland and Minnesota. I mean, Pittsburgh played Cleveland and Buffalo. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
I think Pittsburgh's
– fair enough.
I think Pittsburgh's good. I mean, I think they're a good team. I think that they maybe they really are responding to this coach, and they do have some key guys who are on a Super Bowl team, and they've got some talent. They're not one of the top teams that I'm scared of, though.
Andy in Vermont says, wow, I was just looking over the schedule this morning. I see two teams that may give us trouble, Pittsburgh and the Colts. But that seems like it to me. Love that Pats defense, never mind the offense. Mr. Moss, Mr. Brady, wow. Andy in Vermont.
And this is another fairly simple way to look at things. Even in their 14-2 years, the Patriots have never gone 6-0 in the division. They slip up in the division somewhere. Where might that be this year? The only likely candidate is at Miami. But let's just keep that in mind that, you know, when you play teams twice a year or in some cases three times a year, as good as you might be, there are some other factors, I think, at play when you play a division team and they know you really well, you know them, and that could be, you know, they've never gone 6-0 in the division. Let's just remember that when we
I did say that I thought if they were going to lose a division game this year, it would be at Miami.
At Miami,
because that's traditionally the toughest place for them
to
play.
Right.
They've already beaten the Jets at the Jets, and they're not going to lose at Buffalo. Ain't going
to
happen.
I don't think they're going to lose the two games to Buffalo.
No.
I really don't.
Now, it's not going
to happen. What we are going to hear starting tomorrow and through Friday is, we struggled against Buffalo last year.
Yeah, you're going to hear that.
Well, you know what? Relatively speaking, you did. You beat them at home by, a couple points. Your first play of the season was a fumble return for a touchdown against Buffalo.
Right.
Sure. You struggled against them. Let's be honest. It's not a real good team. And there'll be some rhetoric.
And there's already sniping going on. J.P. Lossman's already bitching at people.
Oh, he
doesn't have the right people, you know, and they don't have the right plays called.
Hadn't heard that yet.
Sniping has already started.
After week one, I mean, you have a tragedy, essentially, and you also lost two or was it three guys in your starting secondary for the year. I know they lost Coe Simpson, who I think is one of their starting safeties, and one of their starting cornerbacks, Webster, in the first game. They were absolutely, just ravaged after week one, and then, lose pretty badly in week two. That can't be a good situation right now. I hadn't heard these latest comments from Lossman, but that's going to be a team. That team is not going to have much of a fun time this weekend.
Surf in Denver, Colorado says, I'm so glad to hear your outrage at the bonehead comments on Coach Belichick, etc. I thought Jimmy Johnson said it best when he said that people have collective amnesia when talking about Spygate, since many people do what the Pats did. By the way, Jimmy Johnson and Barry Switzer both admitted to doing largely the same things.
Yeah, they spelled it out, sure.
Right. The vilification, he says, that Coach B has gone through, forget about it. It's all personal. Well done. I agree Miami gives Brady fits. That is the loss on the road. That's what Surf says. And what I had said, just so I can kind of recap for those that may not have heard it, is that came off the top of the show basically lambasting a couple of boneheads that ESPN threw up on, their NFL Sunday set, in particular, Steve Young and Emmitt Smith. Now, I'm a huge Cowboy fan from way back, because that's where I grew up.
Yep.
And I don't think there was very few running backs, maybe I can think of one or two in the history of the NFL any better really than Emmitt Smith. However, as Stephen A. Smith will say, I think they're both ignorant fools for, calling the Patriots out like they both did without knowing anything about the subject. I mean, do you think that they actually pick up the phone and call guys in that locker room? There's nobody in that locker room that would give them the time of day, number one. Number two, on top of all of that, let's remember that Emmitt Smith was a part of some Dallas teams, let's say, were a little less than clean.
And now we know, because at the same time, Jimmy Johnson on another station was admitting
it. Exactly. Jimmy Johnson said, we did the same things when we were winning Super Bowls back there. Hello, Emmitt. Yeah. Hello. Did you go to the cocaine snorting parties with Michael Irvin and tell him, hey, a little less blow this time, bro?
Right.
And then, of course, Steve Young, he was a part of, the salary cap mismanagement in San Francisco. They may have won some titles, but it certainly wrecked the franchise for a few years thereafter, did it not?
Well, it seems like, and the Jimmy Johnson, Barry Switzer stuff, you've got to figure, what is their motivation to not be telling the truth about this?
They're just climbing on the bandwagon and making, you know, some sanctimonious, you know, sappy comments that, you know, sound good for TV and help them feel better about themselves and put them on a pedestal, when all it's really doing is showing their out-and-out ignorance. And I said it then, and I will say it now, you should never listen to what Steve Young or Emmett Smith have to say for the rest of the season, because they don't. No, they're there because they're former players.
Right.
So if they want to talk about what it's like when it's in the huddle or what it's like to call a certain play or how to react, that's fine. But when they're telling you about what's going on in a locker room, or if they're telling you about how something should happen, you know, because it's the right thing to do, bull-loney.
What did Bill Parcells have anything to add? And I wasn't watching, but did Bill Parcells have anything to add?
I listened to Parcells on the radio show on Friday nights that he does with Chris Mortensen and Keyshawn Johnson.
He's one of my homeboys.
And I actually thought Bill, I don't want to say he soft-pedaled it, but he did. He and Keyshawn actually, I mean, Chris did his best to be the journalist and try to play the issue right down the middle. He, after all, is the one that broke the story on ESPN.com to begin with a week ago. And so, you know, he was trying to get them to go into it. I think they didn't defend Coach Belichick, but what they did do is explain that, you know, these types of things do happen. And, you know, Coach Parcells basically was, well, you know, they got caught doing it. And that's it. He really didn't vilify him. He didn't really go out of his way to say he shouldn't have done it. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really go out of the way and say it's prevalent in the league. He said these kind of things do happen. He said the Patriots were obviously kind of in their face with it here, and that's probably the biggest mistake they made was, you know, being kind of open with it and being somewhat arrogant. And I think we can all agree here that if the Patriots really made a mistake, it was in their, you know, misinterpretation of this rule and the alleged arrogance that goes along with continuing to do it when they knew that it was wrong to begin with.
Right.
Against a rule, to begin with.
And against a team that might, you know, have some guys who know some of their practices might have had a reason to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So well, that's
so, you know, he didn't really kill him. I wanted to hear what Coach Parcells had to say on the show on Friday night on ESPN Radio, and it actually wasn't totally unsatisfying.
Yeah.
It was pretty much what I thought it would actually be, but I was curious to know if he would throw him under the bus, and he really didn't. Howard in Orange, Connecticut. What a great game. It couldn't have come at a better time to shut up all the whining ninnies about the whole videotape incident. Sure looks like this offseason free agent haul is set to go down in history as the best ever. Moss, Morris, Welker, Thomas, Washington, all contributing in big ways. I can't say enough about the players and fans' outpouring of respect and admiration for Coach Belichick. Did he make a mistake? Certainly. But for everything he has done for this franchise, he deserves a pass on this one. He got caught, accepted his punishment. Let's move on. As for the first loss, the only team I see them possibly losing to is the Colts and Indy. However, with the animosity that I am certain Coach Belichick feels toward Bill Polian, I would love to see the Pats smack down the world champs in their own home. I actually hope they run the score up on every team they play this year and go 16-0, 3-0 in the playoffs. All that said, the Finn game in Miami is a concern, but after the first 2 weeks, hit the wrong button here.
Uh-oh.
There we go. That is less of a concern. One question for you, John. My son and I will be making our annual pilgrimage to Gillette for the Cleveland game. He says he's going to sit in Section 131, Row 10.
From where?
He says from Connecticut. Where
leave Connecticut around 5:45 a.m.
Yeah. NFL visa points
is
are a nice
a pilgrimage
thing.
If it's coming from Connecticut?
That's a good point.
You have to pack a lunch. I mean, that's a day trip, right? It's your New England.
Oh, buy Gridiron Grillers when you get here.
If it's longer than, you know, an hour, you got to pack a lunch around New England, right?
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate.
By the way, I still haven't gotten my care package yet.
With Patriots Gridiron Grillers.
Yeah. He says NFL visa points are a nice thing to have. Also get the pregame on-field experience. Very cool.
Oh.
He said, heard you talking about the traffic. Is it better to come from the north on Route 1 than the south? Or does it make any difference?
Helicopter.
Yes. Well, yeah, helicopter would be preferable. But short of that, Howard, yes, definitely go, I would say continue northward on 95. Get off on exit 9. right?
So you're coming from the north.
You're coming from the north. And then
you're heading on, you're on Route 1 traveling south.
And you're heading on Route 1 traveling south back down toward the stadium. So you want to go by it. You know, you don't want to get off on 495. I think that's the worst thing you could
do. Well, and especially I think there's some construction still on 495, which maybe there won't be construction on Sunday morning, but it's still kind of tying things up yet. Not pretty.
Oh, the construction is god-awful.
Not pretty. Get here, just make awful. A day of it, as you probably would have been anyways, and just get here early. Get here quick.
Craig's note, you know, he called in earlier, but here's part of what he had to say. He says, a thoroughly convincing win Sunday night. Stallworth has always been a big play guy, so he has had some exposure on ESPN, but he has never been a 60 or 70 reception a year guy.
No.
If he wants the ball more, well, get open.
Well, that's the other thing.
And you know what? He'll have his chance if other teams decide
exactly.
they have to stop Randy Moss and be like, okay, we're not going to let Moss beat us.
Exactly.
Throw to somebody else.
Does he get open? Is he the type of receiver who's going to get open the way Wes Welker does? Probably not. But if he's got single coverage consistently, he's going to get open. I think Stallworth is going to get open. And it's going to help when Moss has a safety or two shadowing him as well.
He says, looking at the schedule, the road game at Indy will be our biggest test, but I think we outman Indy this year. And then he says, wake up, San Diego. It was not a nightmare. We actually stomped your butt. Why do I keep thinking of that line from Anchorman? Go bleep yourself, San Diego.
San Diego.
Yeah, that's what we need. A little Ron Burgundy. Thank you very much. Right? Very good. This one comes from, I can't make out the name. Okay. Oh, Andy in Morrisville. Okay. Morrisville, Vermont. What Vic did was against the law. Bill broke the rules. Which would you call worse? And we all know they're not the only team to bend the rules. We know the offensive line of the Super Bowl Panthers in 03 were jacked up on steroids, but I suppose that's an even playing field. They weren't cheating. How many teams do you think began to shred, burn, and dispose of their video collections? Just a question. I'd say more than one.
Yeah.
More than one.
Hey, every team's on notice now. Yeah. If I don't want to lose a first-round pick, I better
more than one.
My act, right?
Makia in Roxbury, Mass. Can someone please crack ESPN.com writer Greg Easterbrook over the head with his theory that the Patriots, pretty single-handedly, according to the article, introduced cheating to the NFL and as a result will be responsible for the imminent demise in credibility and revenue in the NFL? That has to be the most absurd thing I've heard of as late. We've commented likewise on Easterbrook.
Looking forward to reading that one.
He's a complete and total dunderhead, knucklehead. On to Goodell. The only issue I can currently take with him is issuing emergency orders and threatening fines and sanctions on public television before the team heard or had a chance to respond to their requests. He only served to provide fodder for an additional flurry of reports, articles, news radio items about the whole controversy. Now, if he made the request and the team was stalling or being non-responsive, I might understand. But as it stands now, I think he acted unprofessionally in making those statements on Sunday. Okay.
Oh.
He's going to be facing his own, music with the whole Veterans Committee thing that he's going through.
Seems that way.
Hello, John. This one comes from Alex in Somerville, I believe. What's your take on the play by the offensive line with a wider set of deep patterns? I think we're vulnerable against some speed rushers like Merriman on Sunday. Not necessarily. Just because with a wider set of deep patterns, I think actually we've got the speed where the receiver can actually get open quicker, which means I don't believe that the offensive line has to hold their blocks as long, which is precisely why I believe that they had the success they did in particular against the Jets.
Yeah, and, you know, the touchdown against the Jets for Moss, I mean, that was a legit deep ball. They haven't had, I mean, what's a deep ball? I mean, the touchdowns that Moss caught the other day weren't deep balls. I mean, those were, you know, inside the 20 or around, you know, in the 20s. And Moss can get open and glide by receiver cornerbacks quicker than most receivers can. So I think that's definitely a factor, the ability to get open quicker. But, you know, I think this offensive line has been tremendous. And I think Kyle Brady is a big part of that. I think Ryan O'Callaghan playing tight end, lining up as a tight end is a big part of it. And I even think guys like, you know, Heath Evans and Kevin Falk are mixing it up a little bit too. Maybe not Maroney as much, but they've gotten great protection. I think it's only the play of the receivers is a factor, but not the only factor. I mean, I think most of this is the offensive line.
By the way, doesn't Brandi Chastain still look really good?
Yeah.
I mean, she's 40. I mean, how old is she? 40 something?
Is she already? I mean, back at what it was
40.
Well, the year that the year of the 59. Infamous.
Well, she looks pretty good then. That's what I tell you.
The year of the infamous magazine cover was
99,
right?
When she ripped off and did the sports bra
thing. And
she
was definitely in her 30s.
And she was in her early 30s then.
Yeah, so she's got to be about 40.
So I think she's probably 44 or so. I mean, somewhere in that.
Early 40s, I'd say.
Yeah, 42, yeah. Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
She still looks pretty doggone good.
Yeah, how about
gotta
that?
I give her that.
How about that?
Sorry, we just got sidetracked here.
ESPN
about
News.
Little
huh?
ESPN News.
Yeah.
Luis.
Women's World Cup.
Yeah. Luis in Tampa says, I think the Patriots will lose one late season game if everything is wrapped up and they basically sit their starters. So the Giants will go 1-15, and the win against the Patriots makes their entire highlight reel for the season. I don't know about that, but I get the point anyway.
Yeah, yeah. You never know. Some of those December games, if your opponents are waiting for the if their cars are already warmed up and they're just waiting to drive away, then they may not be playing at the level that they're capable of.
Yeah, very true. So why don't you give us a little bit of an idea then, and give us the lowdown on what Patriots Today is all about for those that might not have clicked over and had a chance to sample the wares and sort of repackaged format this year.
I'd be happy to.
Ms. Acra as well.
Ms. Acra, yeah. Well, for those who are familiar with Patriots Video News / Patriots Today from its heyday, it is bigger
from its heyday. By the way.
Bigger.
Back when it was
better,
really big.
It was big. It still is. Bigger, better, more involved, more news, more features, more highlights, more everything. Christina Acra is the host. She's doing a tremendous job. She's up here from Florida, in fact. So we're, plenty of people are teasing her, especially even these last couple of days. It's been in the 50s, and I think already we're a little nervous about how she's going to react come November, December. We'll see.
She's going to be down on the sidelines in the parka, fur parka. Is that the deal?
I think she'll avoid the sidelines as much as possible. But no, we're covering the team every day. We got a new show every day. A 20-minute show every day, at least 20 minutes. We're really cranking them out, and we've got a lot more the same coverage of games that you've come to expect. We're covering the team every day. I file a report every day covering the team, previewing the upcoming game, covering the previous game. We've got some great features as well. Some things that you'll see if you don't get a chance to see Patriots All Access, for instance, or some of the other shows that are on Channel 5 that are produced down here, some of the great features we have on that. Even on yesterday's show, a great feature with the Dallas Thomas down in his hometown. So we're really, it's a place to come to follow the team wherever you are. And I know we got a lot of listeners on these shows who are around the country, even the world. And, come check us out if you want to get your taste, get your fill of the Patriots every day, new show Monday to Friday. We're at all the games. We're at every press conference. We're at every locker room session. We're at every practice. And, we bring it all to you.
All a part of the Patriots Football Network.
There you go. There you go. Voiceover guy, John Rook. There you go.
That's right.
So, and we have fun with it, too. I mean, we have a good time. We hope that is portrayed on the shows. And we got a lot of people working on these shows these days, even as we speak, and we encourage you to check it out.
Excellent. Now, on to Buffalo, shall we?
On to Buffalo.
On to Buffalo, simply because I think we can put San Diego in the rearview mirror sufficiently here today. The Bills come in with a I definitely think that they played with heavy hearts last week.
Yeah.
The whole Kevin
Everett.
Thank you, Kevin Everett. Story. It's wonderful to hear that there's some movement involved. That he seems to be on his road to recovery, even though it will liably probably be somewhat difficult for him. It's a story that obviously seems to have a better ending than what was once.
Yeah,
nobody
even
wants
doctors were saying. Bleak
yeah,
and
nobody
dismal
wants to see a quadriplegic situation come up here. That having been said, with that one sort of also out of the way, and the fact that we're happy that he's apparently got a chance to recover completely where he could actually walk again, it's good news. The Bills on the field do have some problems, and it's pretty evident right now that their offense is struggling.
Yeah, the offense is struggling. I think Marshawn Lynch is going to prove to be a real dynamic player, but he's not going to be able to do it himself. Lee Evans, great wide receiver, can't do it himself. I mean, he had a couple of huge games last year, but the consistency that they must be looking for Lossman and Evans, just not there at all. they spent a lot of money on their offensive line, and I don't know. I haven't watched their games close enough yet to know if that's the problem, but I think they really felt that some of the inconsistencies and problems that they've had in the last couple of years on offense, maybe it was a result of our line isn't as good as it needs to be, and they went big bucks on their line. I don't know if that's working yet. And like you said, there were some – I mean, that game against Denver, they were winning the entire game up until the last second, that last second Jason Elam field goal. And during that game, you see one of your players, one of your family members, as a lot of teams like to refer to it as, being not just carted off but taken away on an ambulance, not moving. Mm-hmm. How do you – you know, it's one thing to move on in the coming days and really be able to, okay, you know, we support our player, we're gonna visit him, but we gotta get ready for the upcoming game. I mean, as it happens, he's wheeled off, the ambulance is gone, and 35 seconds later, the play clock, you know, you gotta keep playing. I mean, that's a tough situation, and yet they still almost beat the Denver Broncos. I mean, so you gotta give them a little mini asterisk there and say, a game they almost won, and there were some weird factors. Now, this past game, you know, like we talked about earlier, I don't think Pittsburgh is as good as they've looked so far.
No.
But they're a decent team, and Buffalo got blown out and didn't look good in the process. But, you know, they've played two pretty good teams. They almost won one of them. I wouldn't write them off I'm writing them off as far as playoffs and all that. I think this could be a team that could win a couple games. I don't think they lack talent. They've gotten blown away by injuries these first couple weeks, aside from Kevin Everett. I happen to think that this may have been the year where J.P. Losman does open some eyes. So far, not so much. I'm certainly writing them off for this weekend, and I'm writing them off when it comes to are they playing in January. I don't think they're as miserable as these first couple weeks have been for them. I don't think they're going to have a shot this weekend, but it may not be hopeless for them. Is that faint praise?
I'm amused because I think you're trying to convince yourself of this.
And
it's not working.
They're not good. They're not good. But I think that some of these teams who are 2-0 but have beaten miserable teams might end up being in worse shape than Buffalo will end up being. I don't know.
Possibly.
But Buffalo does have four games against Miami and the New York Jets, who. I'm not sure where those three teams are in relation to each other. They're all pretty bad. Are the Bills worse than both the Jets and Dolphins? Are they? Probably, but maybe not.
Yeah, maybe a little.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know. I really can't make a judgment yet on the Dolphins.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. I think the Jets will probably still end up being the same best team in the division.
They stink.
All right. I'm going to end up the program today by sort of pilfering here, but I'm going to give them credit. So it's not a total complete pilfer. But this comes from Chris Price, who covers for the Patriots for the Metro News in Boston, Metro Boston News, if you will.
Solid guy.
Yeah. Good stuff. And I liked it so much that I wanted to, you know, bring a copy of it in and kind of go over some of the what he has is the 10 things we learned, he says, last night. But we're talking about Sunday night's game against the Chargers, and I actually thought it all pretty much resonated.
Summed it up, huh?
Yeah, kind of summed it all up. So I wanted to give Chris Price again the credit here. But for those that might not have seen it, I wanted to share it with the audience, and especially since many people are outside of New England area, they probably didn't get a chance to see this. Number one, he says, in no particular order, by the way, here are 10 things we learned about the Patriots in the 38-14 win over the Chargers. Number one, no one circles the wagons better than the Patriots, which is absolutely true. He says, national audience looking on, anxious to see how they would react after one of the more difficult weeks in the history of the franchise. The Patriots were able to make a tremendous statement, dominating one of the most talented teams in the NFL and causing linebacker Teddy Bruschi to even say, because of everything that had happened, it was the most satisfying win he's had with the Patriots. And we all know he's had at least three other satisfying wins.
And he's got the, you know,
you, got the you hardware.
Held up, you held up your hand. Not everyone can see that.
Yeah. He got the hardware to prove that.
All right. And that's what he was asked. Are you sure you want to say that?
And he did.
He did.
So that tells you what these guys were thinking in the locker room. That tells you.
And these are words that you don't often hear from Patriots players. One of the things he said was, this was different. This week was different, he admitted,
right,
which you don't always hear.
No. Number two.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like Gary says. Right. Gary just said, yeah, how about coming back from a stroke? That'd be pretty satisfying.
Not so much.
Number two, getting out to a fast start against the Chargers turns them into a completely different team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. That
right.
is not a team that you come from behind on. That is a team that has to get out front itself. And they don't do a very good job of coming from behind either.
No.
Number three, last night is why the Patriots got Adalis Thomas. Well, you know, we surmised that a bit in the offseason after they made the move that, you know, at the very least what we think Thomas would have done, because we all envisioned him being an edge rusher. So I think what we thought he could do at the very least was be able to match up with some of the preeminent tight ends in the NFL. And that, you know, that pretty much to me means that, well, now that he's playing on the inside, he's going to get a chance to really match up with those tight ends. And even though we saw Antonio Gates grab a couple, he didn't really do you any over damage. And, of course, he did step right in the passing lanes at one point and return 165 yards. And there's no way a guy that's 270 pounds like that deserves to have a motor like he has.
The way he ran back that that interception for a touchdown, when is Adalis Thomas going to line up at tight end?
You'd have to wonder. He'd
certainly I'm not just, and I'm
like
not joking.
Why not put him in a blocking fullback?
Put it this way: if Junior Seau at 65 years old is doing it, I'm just kidding about that. If Junior Seau's lining up there, if obviously Vrabel has done his share,
Bilo, he's got a little something for you in the locker room next time he sees you too.
I'm sorry, Junior. But I'm just trying to make the point that Adalis Thomas, how scary will that be? The day he lines up at fullback or tight end. Maybe it doesn't happen because of what happened to Richard Seymour a couple years ago when he lined up at fullback, but how intriguing is that?
Right. Number four, it was a good week to be a New England linebacker. Indeed, it wasn't just Thomas that came up big. Colvin had a great game.
He really did.
It was another solid effort for the New England offensive line. It was,
it
for
really
the most
was.
Part.
And that was with one of their starters out, Stephen Neal.
When it comes to run blocking, the Patriots still put most of their trust in the left side of the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Still very true.
Yep.
Number seven, in the battle of number one receiver against number one cornerback, Randy Moss beats Quentin Jammer.
Well, let's face it, number one cornerback for his team. Quentin Jammer is not in the elite of the NFL.
I wouldn't put him there, no.
No, so, you know.
And he's a Texas Longhorn.
Right.
I still wouldn't put him there.
Right. if the Patriots had Champ Bailey and the Denver Broncos on the schedule, now we're talking, you know, number one cornerback lined up against Randy Moss. Let's see how he does. Randy Moss against Quentin Jammer or Drayton Florence, who was lined up against him on the second touchdown. I think we're taking Randy Moss most days of the week.
Number eight, the worst of the three areas for the Patriots was special teams.
The one weakness right now is place kicking. And I don't know if it's a weakness. It's a little area of concern. However, they were inconsistent to start last year, too, and Gostkowski certainly recovered. So, you know, let's see if that really is a problem. But so far, that's the only area of some concern. Maybe punting's a concern, maybe not. When you only punt twice combined in the first
weeks.
Two games,
yeah.
You don't know
you
if
punting's really
a concern.
No, you don't know.
You don't want to know.
No. San Diego is still missing something. There's a little something that's still missing from San Diego. And I know that there will be some haters probably say, well, it's all North Turner's fault. You know, mm-hmm. He somehow has come in and screwed this up when he was basically handed a championship caliber team.
Right.
Well, they're 1-1. Let's see how they do in another 3 to 4 weeks.
Right.
And if they rip off, you know, 3 or 4 in a row, then we'll see if they're still missing something.
Yeah.
But through the first 2 weeks, anyway, you could say, well, they don't seem to be the same team.
No, they were dominant last year in the regular season.
They just don't seem to be the same team. And number 10, I think the best for last here, and so does Chris Price, by the way, the fans were heard. The fans were heard.
Are you talking about when they gave Bill Belichick a 25-minute standing ovation or when they chanted LT sucks twice in the fourth quarter?
You know, maybe a combination of both.
Combination, yeah. No, the fans were into it.
Yeah, one of the few times I actually remember in the a little over five-year history of the stadium that how many years have we been doing this now?
This is the sixth season.
Year.
Yeah.
So this is a little over
sixth
five
NFL
full
season.
Years.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
I know. It's hard to believe. I can't believe this is already our sixth year here.
Wow.
But in this time, I remember few crowds that were as electric, as boisterous, as emotionally charged as this crowd was.
I wasn't here for Brazil-Mexico last Wednesday night, but that may have been pretty...
67,000 here for that,
67,000.
Huh? Shocking.
That was, that was a...
Well, actually, no, it wasn't shocking. I mean, you know, that's just the influence...
You know I don't speak Spanish. In English, please.
it doesn't surprise me really in the least. There's
heavy
Hispanic soccer influence.
This crowd was into it as much, I agree with you, as, you know, like it was one of those playoff games against Indy, and they were into it, no question. Or, you know, those championship banner unveiling nights against Oakland and, help me out, Indy, when they, the openers, Thursday night openers, those crowds were pretty good too. So this was pretty pretty impressive.
Got anything you want to plug or preview?
Well, I mean, we got our show today talking about Adalys Thomas and Roosevelt Colvin, for one thing. We also have some pretty interesting stuff. We got a guy who's been doing some sort of man on the street type of Jay Leno stuff for us, and
cool.
We're airing some of that from the crowd.
Let's find out how stupid our fans really are.
Well, we don't say it that way, John.
Oh,
however,
oh, okay.
I see what you're saying. No, some pretty good stuff from that crowd. I mean, it was some fun times out there. So, you know, Tuesday, as you know, as I've come on the show in the past too, Tuesday's kind of that bridge day where we still have some leftover stuff from the previous game, but before we get into the next game. But there's never a shortage of storylines here with this team. So there you go. Check it out.
Tomorrow's playbook, we'll get into the locker room. We'll have some conference calls. We'll get into previewing a little bit more of the Pats and the Bills, right?
And we also have something that
we have
you're Matt, about to say.
Matt Kelso will be on tomorrow with us at 2:30 p.m. He's with Mark Kelso. Sure, I said Matt. Yeah.
Matt Castle, Mark Kelso.
Mark Kelso.
Jack Castle.
Is he the Buffalo News? Do we know?
Jeez, that was a great game.
Bills.com, I think, maybe. Mark Kelso.
Yeah.
Hello. Duh. Sorry, Gary. You know, what can I tell you?
Don't apologize
Such
to Gary.
An idiot.
Yeah, I know.
Better apologize to the player, tomorrow.
I know. I will apologize to him, but yes.
He's probably listening.
Yes. Mark Kelso will join us.
I apologize
1,000 times. Thank
you. There
you go. But he will join us tomorrow at 2:30. So we got lots of good stuff coming up. Thanks to B-Lo. Thanks to Gary. Same Pats time, same Pats channel tomorrow, right here inside the playbook.